challenge this parsha, but it's a good challenge because our policy is that we talk about the parsha every week. So for this year, we tried to stick to Rishon. God willing, next year we'll try to stick to Sheni in order to give proper focus. So Parshas Nasa is, as you know, the longest parsha in the Torah, that magic number of 176. 176 psukim in the longest parsha, 176 psukim in the longest parak in Tanakh and Tehillim, and 176 blot in the longest Masechta, Bava Basra. So for some reason, that's the magic number. So Parshas Nasa has a lot of psukim and a lot of topics. Rishon does not fully put all that on display. Rishon gives us significantly less than 176 psukim to work with. About 10% of that, or a little bit less than 10% of that. And certainly in terms of some of the major well-known topics, they don't yet get reached in Rishon. But it gives us a unique opportunity to focus on some of these ideas that maybe you wouldn't necessarily talk about in Parshas Nasa, and hopefully we'll be able to do that a little bit. Parshas Nasa almost always turns out the way it does this year, that it is read after Shavuos. Is there any imagery in reading Nasa after Shavuos? So some suggest, in the Sefer Sifrei Tzadik, he wants to suggest that it has to do with the fact that we find Vidui as one of the themes in this Parsha. Not in Rishon, but this introduction is a sneaky way to put non-Rishon topics into the discussion. Yeah, Vidui.
Oh, Vidui.
Yeah. And therefore, maybe the notion is that once we've received the Torah on Shavuos, and now we want to engage in some introspection and reflect upon the message of the Torah, and therefore, Vidui and Tshuva are the immediate reaction. Others suggest the Kajugla Barav in the Sefer Eretzvi, we've mentioned many times in the past the Tshuvas Eretzvi, so the same Kajugla Barav has a Sefer of Drashas called Eretzvi. And in that Sefer, he suggests that it's similar to the concept that we have, that Tochacha of Kisavo is always read before the Rosh Hashanah. Because, as the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah, that we have this idea of Tichle Hashana V'Kilo Seha, that the year should end with all of its problems, and we should then begin a new year of Bracha, and so Zos HaBracha ends up being the first thing read in the new year. As some point out, that it's really a whole theme that goes all the way from Kisavo to Zos HaBracha in terms of our trying to structure the year that way. So too, Shavuos is kind of a new beginning. So we right away start with Bracha, because Nasa is the parasha of Brachas Kohen, which is a sneaky way to introduce Brachas Kohen into the discussion. So even though neither Vidui nor Brachas Kohen is the topic of the first Aliyah, but it gives us the opportunity to at least mention them. Maybe we'll see, time permitting, whether we'll talk about Brachas Kohen a little bit, but in any event, these are some of the highlights that are associated with this parsha, which maybe can be relevant to its placement specifically now, after this new beginning of receiving the Torah.
I didn't catch why it's really connected to Shavuos.
Because once we've received the Torah, so now we want to assess how our behavior matches. So it's kind of a push towards tshuva.
Isn't it vidui? Tshuva means that you already know that you've done something wrong. Cheshbon and nefesh.
Vidui is a type of cheshbon and nefesh, which is itself, if we get
true.
You know, if we were up to the aliyah where vidui was in, we would get into a little more detail about how vidui accomplishes that. But that's the way the Rambam writes, that when somebody wants to do tshuva, he first does vidui. So vidui, what that means, it's not simply a declaration. It is a confrontation of one's inadequacies. Or, as we discussed earlier in the year, maybe it's a confrontation with other elements that motivate you to respond with growth. But either direction makes sense, that after the Torah is given, so now we want to kind of address things in that sense. And the word Nasa, a little bit of a Hasidic perspective. So Eliyahu Schlesinger discusses in his Sefer Eilah HaDvarim, there's many Svarim on Chumash Moreim called Eilah HaDvarim. So the language of Nasa for counting, it's a different formulation than we find elsewhere in the Torah, Ki Sisa, Ki Sifko, the language here, specifically by the Levim of Nasa, he wanted to suggest, again in a very Chassidish style, that we know that sometimes we avoid the letter Nun. That in Ashrei, the Gemara tells us in Brachos, that Nun is left out. It has a connotation of Nefila, of falling down, and we instead skip right to Samach, which is Somech Hashem L'Kol HaNoplim, that it's the more positive message, which is why in my YU email address, it's D Feldma, we left off the N, I assume intentionally, to keep this theme of leaving off the Nun of Nefila and Ashrei, so too email follows the same pattern. I assume that could be the only explanation. So normally maybe we have some type of hesitation to use the word Nun, but in the right context, it can send a positive message. So a quote that the B'nai Yisrael says, that the language of Nes, the idea of a miracle, is that it's Nefila adjacent to Somech, to the Nun and the Samach. So first you have the falling down, and then you have a miraculous recovery, Somech Hashem L'chol HaNoflim. So that's the connotation of the word Nes. So perhaps also when it comes to Levian, so there's a little bit of a remez here, that Der Avoda, it's going to be a time when that's going to be b'chorbano, that's going to be not active, but it will be ultimately rectified, ultimately there will be a Messias, it will be lifted up, and that's what this language of Nasa, and specifically in the context of Levium, is meant to connote. You know, it's not everybody's cup of tea, it's a little bit of a more Hasidish approach, but that's an interesting idea. There is a lot of discussion about what exactly the Torah is trying to convey with the first pasuk here. So Nasa es Rosh B'nei Gershon Gam Heim Leves Avosam L'Mishpachosam. So Gam Heim, what does that mean? So there are a couple of things to focus on here. The Gam, into some relationship being suggested between this and the end of Parshas Bamidbar, where Kohas is given their instruction. So here also, Gershon Gamheim, fine. So that's something we have to figure out. And also the language of L'mishpachosam. What exactly is that meant to convey? The base of Osam, L'mishpachosam. And in the context of Kohas, it's the other way around. You have Mishpacha before Avos. So the Medrash says that this is because the significance of Gershon, Gershon is the Bechor. His significance comes from his avos status. So we mentioned first Beis Avosam, while in the context of Kohas mentioned before, so Kohas carried the Aron, so therefore their chashivus doesn't come from their ancestry, it comes from the avos. So it's mentioned the other order. The Moshe of Zakenin has a more difficult approach on this. We have to talk a little bit more about that idea also, about the idea of Bechorah and why Gershon ends up second, even though he's the Bechorah. But Moshe of Zakenim has a lot of discussion of what he's talking about, because Moshe of Zakenim says the pasuk plays down Shpachosam here, puts it afterwards, because Gershon only had two families associated with it. So it's a small number. It's not a big deal to Shpachosam. But as all the later Sfarim point out, that was true about Merari also, so it doesn't explain what's unique about Gershon. So there's a lot of trying to figure out about what that Moshe of Zakenim is talking about. But the first part of Gam Heim, and the idea that Gershon is kind of second here, even though he's the Bechor, so that's the topic of a lot of the discussion on this opening Aliyah. And the Medrash has a statement which prompts a lot of discussion. The Medrash says that Yekari Hi Mipninim, so the Torah is considered to be more precious than rubies. So how do we see that represented? Because here Gershon is the Bechor, but Kohas, they carry the Aron, they carry the Torah, so they get mentioned first. So they're mentioned in Bamidbar, and then here in Nasa, Gam Heim, also the Bechor. You see, the Bechor is kind of an also-ran to the Aron. It's a little bit hard to understand, though, because it begs the question, so why is that the way? So if we normally give priority to the Bechor, so one would have thought that the mission of Gershon would be to carry the Aron. Why would it be the other way around? The Chassam Sofer suggests that there is a reflection here of a different quality than Bechorah, that sometimes, as the Gemara suggests in the Nachas and Daf Tzadi Ches, that sometimes we prioritize the middle. That, we find in the context of the menorah that all of the flames tended towards the middle. And maybe that's reflected here, that therefore Gershon gets this rearrangement, and Kehas, the middle son, gets this chashuva position of carrying the Arum. It's interesting that the Maharal, the Gur Aryeh, he has a discussion about that concept, which is also in this Aliyah, because talking about a different concept, that in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, to skip to the end for a second, says Zos Avodas Mishpachos B'nei Merari, L'chol Avodas Samba Omoe B'Yadi Samar Ben Aaron HaKohen. And then the Pasuk goes on to say, in the, where did it go, the Pasuk about Gershon, where to go, sorry. Yeah, sorry, the pasuk earlier, excuse me, the pasuk chavzayin. Al pi Aaron uvana, tia ko avodas b'nei ha-gershuni v'chol masam v'chol vadosam, v'akadetim aleihim mishmeres es kol masam. So the Maharal says that that language of al pi Aaron uvana, why do they have to single that out when they're focusing on Gershon and talking about Isamar? So then they say all of Aaron's children. What's that relevant specifically to Gershon? So here he has a different focus. Here he has Gershon in the middle, not because Gershon's the middle son, that's Kehas, but the job is relatively speaking the midway Kedusha, so to speak, between Kehas and Merari. And the Maharal suggests this idea is to show that the middle kind of includes all the perspectives. So we refer to all of Aaron's children in the context of the middle. This is basically what you call centrist Judaism. It's saying that that which is at the center is that which incorporates all the edges. So there is a certain quality to the middle. So maybe that's what's going on. Maybe the Torah wants to show chashivas to the middle by putting Gershon here. In general, it's a question, you know, so would you say that maybe just in terms of strength, that maybe the Aron should be carried by the Bechor, should be carried by the oldest? Is it something that's heavy? So some of the Meforshim assume that the Aron didn't actually weigh anything, because the Gemara says that the Aron nose is nosa, so to speak, it was miraculous to lift up the people lifting it. So it didn't weigh anything, which is a little bit at odds with the Ramban. The Ramban has a comment that this idea of Miben Shloshim Shana V'mala, so we see here Gam Hain, this is true both about Gershon in this week's parsha and also about Kehas in last week's parsha, they also had to be 30 years old. Why? Because, says the Ramban, the Aron was heavy. So therefore, to carry it on their shoulder, you need to have 30-year-old people and up. But others assume differently. Others assume that the Aron actually didn't weigh anything, and therefore it shouldn't need strong people. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a drasha about this in the Sefer Darash Moshe, where he suggests that the two points go together. That we're trying to show that on the one hand, yes, it's true that the Aron is lifted miraculously, but at the same time, it doesn't mean, therefore, we have weak people carrying it. That we still invest all of the physical resources in carrying it, even though the actual carrying happened al pi neis. And he compares this to spiritual accomplishments in general. The spiritual accomplishments are bestowed upon us by God, but we still put in the physical effort in order to get there. This is very much, by the way, a Shavuos theme. So if you read this parsha right after Shavuos, so we find that this is perhaps very much the notion that we have when it comes to Talmud Torah. And the Gemara Maseches Megillah has this discussion that a person says, Yagati v'lo matzasi al tamen, matzasi v'lo yagati al tamen. I've worked hard, I haven't accomplished, you shouldn't believe him. I've accomplished, I haven't worked hard, you shouldn't believe him. You should only believe someone who says, Yagati matzasi. So why is that true? If I'm looking all day for my lost wallet, but I'm looking in the wrong place, I'm not going to find it. Yagati v'lo matzasi. And then you know that joke about the guy who was looking under the lamppost for his wallet. And they say, well, so you must have lost it over here. He said, no, I lost it over there, but the light's better over here. Right? It doesn't help if you're looking in the wrong place. If you look all day, you're not going to find it. So too, that should normally be the case. So why should we say, Yagati v'lo matzasi al tamen? Or the other way around. If you look in the right place the first time, then you're also going to succeed without working hard. So the Chazon Ish explained about that Gemara, that the whole idea of spiritual accomplishment is that it correlates more directly to Yigiyah, that you have to work hard, but then that's what makes the spiritual bracha happen. So it's not that okay, in other areas of life I can work hard and not succeed. Here, you work hard, that's the tenai that makes you succeed. This is perhaps also relevant to Shavuos and Bamidbar, and also that in the beginning of Bamidbar, so the whole imagery of a desert is very evocative, and there's a lot of discussion about what is the reason why the Torah is given in a desert, why we have this imagery of Midbar, and that we mentioned recently the Shavuos Pri Yitzchak. We talked about Kavod Abrios, we talked a little bit about the Ritzlo Petterberger, and the Shavuos Pri Yitzchak. So he talks about the fact that you have the imagery of a midbar for the Torah. You say, umi midbar matana, that the Torah was given to us kind of as a gift in the midbar. And elsewhere, we find the Torah is treated like a purchase. The Pasuk says, ki lekach tov masati lachem torasi al tazov, it's a transaction that we paid for. So Bitzel Petterberger, Yitzchak Blaser, in his Hakdamah to his Shuvas, he says there's both, that there is a real effort result when it comes to Torah study, but then HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestows upon us even more than what our effort should have yielded. So there is a unique relationship between our physical effort and what is bestowed upon us, so to speak, miraculously. And I thought maybe there's some imagery of that Shavuos night. The minute you stay up all night Shavuos night, and on the one hand you think, okay, so we just finished finals, right? That's what we do in finals, to try to cram in as many hours as possible. Which means staying up all night. But we also know that ideally we don't find that so productive. So you end up crashing the next day. So if we're really trying to accomplish as much as possible al pi derech hateva, it's not clear that's really the way to do it. But the commitment that's shown in staying up all night, Shavuos night, is experiential and it has a dramatic effect. And perhaps that's the nature of this relationship between Torah and the effort that goes into it. So this is very similar to what Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests, is the imagery here, that yes, the Aron didn't really need any strength in order to carry it, but we davka want strong, strapping 30-year-old men to carry it, because we invest the physical resources, even though the actual work gets done miraculously. He also then goes on to make a little more of a drasha of Moshe in his Sefer Darash Moshe there, that the Gamheim, while he's talking about this, he says that the Gamheim is there to show that Gershon's contribution is just as important as the more obvious spiritual benefit of the Aron that Kehas is involved in. And that's, again, to make the point that everyone's contribution is crucial and that no one should feel like what they're doing is not important. So, in any event, the Kli Yakar addressing this issue of Bechor, so still doesn't fully address it, but the Kli Yakar writes that we want to show when the Gemara has a drasha here about Yakari Himipninim that the Torah is even greater than the value of the Bechorah, that yeah, you could have thought that maybe Gershon as the Bechorah should be the one carrying the Torah, but then he would get listed first, and then we would think, okay, so he's only listed first because he's the Bechorah. So since the non-Bechorah gets listed first, so then it's clear that it's the Kedusha of the Torah that makes him listed first. It's interesting. Vassal Rudinsky talks about this together with a couple of other points. He lists a number of observations. He says, first, this whole language of Gamhein and Yikari Himipninim and the idea of Leves Avosom, Lemishpachosom that we mentioned before, the Medrash's comment that it's only Gershon that gets mentioned Avos first because that's where the significance comes from, the ancestry, specifically from the fathers. He also notes that later on, in the second Aliyah, so there is a language the Pasuk has of Avodas Avoda. Ben Shloshim Shana V'mala V'Aben Chamishim Shana K'lapal Avoda Avodas Avoda V'Avodas Masa Bo Amoed. So what is Avodas Avoda, besides being a Sefer Masechet Zevar written by Shlomo Kluger? But before that, Avodas Avoda here in the Torah, so it says Rashi, it's a reference to the shir, the saltayim, the kinoret, shi'avod, la'avoda acheres. That the instruments, the musical instruments, and the shir, that's called avoda savoda because that is an avoda on behalf of the avoda beis hamikdash. It's an avoda on behalf of something else, which is itself an unusual formulation. So Vital Rudinsky, in addressing all of these different points, he makes the following observation. Now, the Gemara Maseches Brachos and Daf Kafches talks about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was dying, And they asked him, why did he look like he was so afraid, like he was so scared? So he said two things, which sounds like they're two separate things, even though they seem to be the same thing. He said that he's worried because he's about to face the King of Kings. And imagine how scared he would be if he was going to face a human king. So for sure, you're going to face Melech Malchei HaMelechim. How terrifying is that? That's one thing. And the second thing is, he doesn't know whether he'll be directed towards Gan Eden, towards Gehenna. So you could ask, but those are the same thing. He's worried about Din. So he's worried about how it's going to go. Why is that listed as two separate considerations? So he wanted to suggest as follows. Is that really everything in life has two levels of judgment to it. It has the nigla and the nista. It has the judgment on that which is very much in front of us and revealed. And then there is the hidden element. So whatever Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did in his life, good or bad, so that would be judged on a surface judgment. But beyond that, there's a whole other level of effect that you have on the world. So especially Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was influential on so many people, so everything that he did beyond its own significance also could have impacted hundreds of thousands of people, and therefore the impact may go way beyond that. So he's worried about one level of judgment for himself, and he's also worried about the broader judgment that applies to the ripple effect of everything that gets done. And he suggests in that context we say the expression mitzvah goreris mitzvah. So what does that mean? One mitzvah causes another. So on one level it means that when one person does another mitzvah, so other people are influenced. Other people will also do mitzvahs. So we have a whole different madriga of judgment that is impacted by the ripple effect, so to speak. So with that in mind, so what was the significance of Kehas? Why does Kehas come first if Kehas is not before? So some of the Mefarshim, the Ravanel and the Orachaim, suggests that Kehas's Chashivas is what? That Kehas was the ancestor of Moshe and Aaron. So that's what the Medrash says, that Gershon has Avos listed first, because his Chashivas comes from his ancestry. So Kehas is going in the opposite direction. Kehas is Chashiv, not because of who came before, but of who came after. That Aaron and Moshe descended from Kehas, so therefore all the cousins benefit as a Chashivas to the Kehasi family. So the implication seems to be that the fact that Moshe and Aaron were raised in such a family, that says something retroactively about Kehas. That says something that gives Kehas some retroactive chashivas. So again, not based on Osom Mishpachosom, but the other way around, Mishpachosom is based on Osom, that the family bestows the sense of Heshu, Levavus, Labanav, Labanav, Levosom, and go in either direction. But it says something about what was going on with Kehas, that they would have such children. So he goes further. He says the name Kehas connotes that their teeth, their teeth were blunted. And the name is meant to represent a certain level of empathy. That Kehas had the ability to empathize with people suffering. But not only the suffering that's obvious, that the Gemara has the imagery that the teeth represent the outer door of the body, so to speak. So whatever is inside the teeth is the inside, the inner suffering. So if you have somebody who's obviously in terrible matzav, so a lot of people will have rachmanis for them. But if you have somebody who looks okay on the outside, everything looks like it's in good shape, but they're suffering on the inside, so it takes a special personality to have rachmanis on them. So that's what Kehas represented, that was what their name represented. So this mitzvah was passed down to Aaron and Moshe. And he doesn't comment on this there, but you know, this is very much one of the distinguishing points of Moshe. I think we talked about this in the past, you know, his ability to identify with the suffering of the Jewish people, even though he was removed from their suffering. He was, first of all, Levi, and second of all, living in the house of Paro. So he was somebody who didn't necessarily have to feel thrown in with a lot of the Jewish people, but his ability to have rachmanis on them and feel this connection is where his leadership came from. I think it was Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, somebody who suggested that actually the reason that Paro exempted the Levium from slavery is because Paro knew with his prophecy, or with his tricks, that the ultimate redeemer of the Jewish people would come from the tribe of Levi. So therefore he thought, okay, he could head off that plan of the past. that if he leaves Levi outside of slavery, so they're not going to have any rachmanis because they're not going to feel the burden. And that way, no salvation is going to come from the tribe of Levi. And obviously, he underestimated Moshe Rabbeinu, the ability that Moshe had to connect to the suffering of others, even if he wasn't feeling it. So this is the midah that traces back to Kohas, traces back to his ancestor. So that's where the chashivus comes from. So that's what he wants to suggest, that that's what all of us means to represent, that that's why Kohas ends up first, even more than the Bechor, and that's what the language of Beis Avosam, Shbechosam is meant to convey in its formulation. And then he says also, Avodas Avoda, that phrase, is also meant to represent, as we said before, the ripple effect, the impact that the impact has. So your Avoda is what you do directly, and then the Avodas Avoda is the effect of the effect, and that's this secondary level of judgment that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was worried about, and that's also the message that you see being conveyed here through the special Sechus that is associated with Kahas. Okay, it's a nice idea. There are many other drushim that are written on this idea of what the Karihim Iplinim is meant to suggest here. So, for example, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, commenting in his Emes Yaakov over here, suggests that the idea of saying Karihim Iplinim, so first of all, you note that where does the Medrash say this? The Medrash could have said it in last week's parsha, could have said it by Kahas, that, oh, Kahas is younger, but Karihim Iplinim, because of the Torah, he's mentioned first. But it's mentioned here the other way around, that Gershon, who's oldest, gets mentioned later, Gam Heim, oh, Yukarihim Iplinim. So it's a little bit out of place. So he suggests that maybe the whole thing is a shvach of Gershon, is a praise of Gershon, is to show that Gershon had such appreciation for Torah that one of the indications of the appreciation somebody has of Torah is to fulfill the idea, as the Gemara has it, of Mekomalam Dai Hiskalti, Mekalmida Yosu Mekulam, that a person recognizes that he gains Torah not just from famous, prominent people who are older and bigger than him, but also from people who are his students and people who are younger than him. And that if you really value the Torah, so you'll seek it out from there as well. So Gershon perhaps had that quality that even though they were the Bechor, they were willing to put their younger brother ahead of them and to learn from them. And therefore, it's really not a praise of Kohas over Gershon, it's a praise of Gershon over Kohas. So saying that Gershon lets themselves come second in order to learn from the one who is smaller than them, and that's what it means, Yakarihim Ibdinim. Gershon recognizes that the Torah is so precious, it's worth doing that, and therefore the Pasuk is invoked in this context. And of course, that's very much a Shavuos idea as well, so for Nasa coming right after Shavuos, because the whole idea of the Torah being given on the smaller mountain on Har Sinai is also meant very much to convey that and the importance of anivus and humility in Limud HaTorah is maybe also being represented here and there. It's another Shavuos Nasa connection. My friend of Yishmael Shulman Shlita in the Sefer Meirish Babira has a comment about this also, and he has a very drushy approach where he suggests, based on the Chassam Sofer says that the language of Kahas is meant to symbolize when the Jews are Bad Masam, the Pasuk below Yikas Amim, Kiyavo Shiloh below Yikas Amim, it's a way of representing the fact that the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael at home. And the language of Gershon is meant to suggest Gorshu, when they are in exile, and then Merari is suffering, and Merirus. So that the Gemara is making, that the Torah is making the point here, that you might think that the Shekhinah is only present when the Kahas, when the Jews are Bad Masam. So the Medrash is saying here, no, that Gershon also, that even in the state of Gershon, so Yukarihim Ipnim, that the Torah is so precious, that will confer the Shekhinah even when they're not Bad Masam. And that's parallel to the Drasha, the same Pasuk, Yukarihim Ipnim. So the Gemara, the end of Horius, uses that pasuk to say that the Talmud Chacham has a status that transcends the Kohen, and therefore it's meant to convey here that even when we don't have all of this happening, we still have the ability to maintain the connection of the Shekhinah, which is conveyed here through the language of Gershon, which you could maybe argue on that maybe therefore it would be more instructive to be in the context of the Arum, it would convey the message of Torah's ability more powerfully than being in the context of Gershon, but okay, all comes from this Sam Sofer, that Gershon is the language of Gershu, is meant to convey the exile, and that's what the Pasuk then is telling us, Yekarihim Bipnim. Okay, maybe we'll just mention another point or two. So, this Pasuk Chav Dalet, Zos Avodas Mishpachos HaGershuni La'Avodol Masah. This is the avod of the Gershuni family for them to make and to carry. So there is some discussion the commentaries have, does this include the Kiyor V'chano as well? So some suggest the whole discussion, if you're looking to say from the Gadim Chadashim, there's a whole discussion about how those were carried, did they have Badim in them or not? There's a whole literature about this, a little bit of a lengthy discussion. But some suggest that this is also connected to two psukim later in Pasuk Chavav, that there the Pasuk says, V'yas kol klei avodasam, V'yas kol asher yaseh lahem v'avadu. So maybe that's all included in everything asher yaseh v'avadu. But that itself is a whole discussion. The Ramban suggests that this Pasuk Chavav, kol asher yaseh lahem, that's a reference to all of the kelim of the Mishkan. They also were making those kelim. The implication seems to be, as the Meshech Chachma points out, that this means that the kelim had to be made l'shma. The Panim Yafos has a little bit of a different version. As the Panim Yafos suggests that the ropes and everything like that that was used for carrying, so eventually they're going to wear out. You're going to have to make new ones. So the Pasuk here is telling us that the Levim had to be involved in replacing it. That was also a part of their task. But from the Ramban, it really sounds like he means the ones that they had in the beginning, that the kelim themselves are made by the Levim, and that they're not stam made by people without any intent, that there is a requirement of lishma, which is itself a whole discussion, and it gives us a little bit of a Shabbos synergy, because it connects to our Shabbos theme, and it connects to something we talked about at some length, that there is a whole position the Yerushalmi suggests and the Ramban in the commentary to Sukkah has, that the assumption is that the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, had to be made l'shma, had a requirement of l'shma. And the Kalim, one could assume, should be included in that. Because the Kalim, the Rambam, has enough locus with the Ramban, that the Pasuk in Parshas Truma, V'asuli Mikdash, V'shachanti V'sotam, so the Rambam understands that that includes the kelim as well. It doesn't just mean the building; it means the kelim. And therefore, if there is a din that the Beis HaMikdash has to be done the Shema, the Mishkan has to be the Shema. So the pasuk that says to build the Mishkan, according to the Rambam, also includes making the kelim. So it makes sense that also has to be the Shema. The Meshech Chachma notes that by Merari you don't find this language, because what Merari carried was Tashmishei Kedusha, those things that were in the service of Kedusha instead of Kedusha itself. So therefore it just says L'chol Kilehem, while in the context of Gershon, so it emphasizes that they made them, because the actual Kedusha had to be made directly with Shema. And what we discussed in the context of learning Shabbos is that there is a tradition among the students of the Avnei Nezer. It's especially important to know the Shabbos because you offer the Eglital. But among his students, you have the Kachav of Rav, who we mentioned at the beginning, and you have the Chelkas Yod. And both of them suggest in their Svarim that the idea of Melechas Machshavas that we have, that guides Hilchos Shabbos, is, as we know, derived from the Mishkan. So in the context of the Mishkan, what it meant is that the Mishkan is a context for Lishma, everything has to be done Lishma, and maybe Malachas Machshavas, we saw that we had some struggle as to how to understand what this concept of Malachas Machshavas means, so maybe it means Lishma, it means that phrase Lishma is a way of including a lot of different concepts that we saw within the context of Malachas Machshavas, that maybe it refers to Kavana, that things have to be done purposefully, it's not the exact same thing as Kavana, but it has an overlapping connotation. And also the requirement that we find in Hilchos Shabbos that things have to be done in a way that is formal and that is lasting and that is artistic, so to speak, So maybe all of that is also a part of this lishma type of dedication. So that's where we find this connection, that Shabbos, malacha has to be done lishma, so to speak. Maybe that's what malacha Shabbos means. And that's how the Kachav Lever understands, the Talmidim of the Adonizer understand, that in the Mishkan also, that's what Malachas Machshavas means. That the idea that the Mishkan was done with Malachas Machshavas is meant to connote the idea of Lishma that the Mishkan had to be infused with, and therefore maybe the Kalim also had this notion. Alright, so maybe we'll end there in terms of Rishon. I'll just take a quick idea about Berachas Kohanim, which we can fit in because of that Nasa introduction, and maybe the whole parsha is here because of Berachas Kohanim, so we can justifiably bring it over here. So Berachas Kohanim, there are many different important themes, and among them we find many unique halachas. There is a whole discussion about whether Berachas Kohanim is a avoda or is it a tefila, and the halachas that we find don't seem to match either. For example, it has to be done with Lashon HaKodesh. And tefillah normally can be done in any language. And Nasa Bishtetner has in the Sefer that it represents the fact that the brachos are spiritual brachos, which we can't translate. If we're going to translate, then the Mela, they're going to lose their meaning. And that same way we have this idea that we say that Kresh Baruch Hu Mamali Mishalos Lidenu L'Tova, he should fulfill our requests positively. So why do we need both that? Fulfill our requests and positively. It connotes the fact that we think we know what we want, but we don't really know what's best for us. So we hope that we'll get what we want, but we also hope that it'll be good. And so too, when it comes to the Berachas Kohanim, it's a spiritual bracha that transcends anything we could put into words. So therefore, it has to maintain its original Hebrew. But then beyond that, there is a lot of unique halachas. The halachas that it has to be done specifically by a Kohen, maybe specifically by a Kohen who loves the people in the congregation. That's whole discussion. There's a lot to say about this. We talked about this for a long time, just highlighting some of the key details that come up in Berachas Kohanim. There's a whole discussion whether it's a mitzvah only on the Kohanim, or whether it's a mitzvah on the Israel as well. That's the Haredi view, meaning the view of the Sefer HaCharedim. The Sefer HaCharedim, and maybe a few other Rishonim, that's most commonly associated with Sefer HaCharedim, that there's not only a mitzvah on the Kohen, there's a mitzvah on the Israel with his Barech. The non-Kohen also has a mitzvah to receive the Berachas Kohuna. And then there's a whole discussion, there are some conditions that, for example, the Kohen can never have killed somebody. And there's a whole discussion what that means. Only if you murdered someone, what if you killed somebody in self-defense? So that's a major literature about this. Soldiers in the Israeli army, soldiers in any army, if you killed somebody in self-defense, so you're considered to be also a Roteach for this purpose. You could hear it both ways. On the one hand, maybe you're not guilty of anything. On the other hand, we know that David HaMelech was excluded from building the Beis HaMikdash because of his justifiable homicides. So too, maybe even justifiable homicide might be an exclusion from Berachas Kohanim.
Yeah, Shlomo HaMelech also killed people, but he was allowed to build the Beis HaMikdash.
So you have to figure that's a kasha on the whole story in terms of David, why there's a difference.
You have to figure out what the difference is.
Right, so that's a kasha on itself.
Yeah.
But the idea that even understandable, justified homicide might still exclude someone from certain holy activities has oppressed me. So to say, on the one hand, this person is not a murderer, but on the other hand, maybe might still be excluded. So there's a whole literature about this. So it's also a literature that we touched upon that we read Parshas Bahar a few weeks ago. So the prohibition of Anas Devarim, you can't hurt people's feelings or embarrass people. And the Gemara, next year, she was in Bava Metzia. Gemara says in Bava Metzia that embarrassing someone is like killing them. So there's a whole discussion how literal that is, and it happens to be that Nasa Bishtetler and Rav Vosner both have tshuvas discussing this question that if embarrassing somebody is like killing them, so would you say that a Kohen who embarrasses somebody shouldn't do it? Because it's like killing them. So they're not willing to go that far, but it's an interesting discussion. But perhaps all of the details in Berachas Kohanim could be explained in light of the idea that really what it is, essentially it's a play, it's a show, in the best sense of the word, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up this mitzvah as a display of ahava for the Jewish people, and he sent his emissaries to be the actors in the show, the Kohanim, and therefore there's a very big focus that they have to be proper kelim for ahava, they have to love people, they have to not be people who have killed people, They also can't be people who have been over the Avodah Zarah. That's also a psul for Berachas Kohanim. But all of this is meant to convey a certain very specific script that can't be translated. It's all a part of what's going on here. So it's neither Avoda or a Tefillah. Probably could inform a lot of the discussion about a lot of the details. It's a big discussion why we don't do it every day Zman Hazeh and Chutz La'aretz. A lot of written about that. Famously, the Ramah says that we don't have the right level of happiness. And we need Simcha in order to do it. And that in Eretz Yisrael, we're on a higher level of Simcha. And in Chutz La'aretz, we need Yontif to get us up to that level of Simcha. So in Yontif, we're at the right Madrega to Dochen, but not during the week. And obviously, there's a lot of controversy about this. The Bra and others had attempted at different points to reinstitute daily Berachas Kohanim, because it seems to be hard to justify the Ramah's explanation. If it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, how do we get away with skipping it most of the time? The Kadja Glover has a fascinating tshuva about this, where he suggests that the Ramah is not saying that we get away without it, but that when the Shliach Tzibur says, L'keinu L'kei Avoseinu, so he is fulfilling Berachas Kohanim that way. And on some level, that is a fulfillment of Berachas Kohanim. So it's difficult, because how do we justify that? Sorry? Well, he's not necessarily a Kohen. It's usually the case he's not going to be a Kohen. So he's not a qualified Shliach to act on behalf of the Kohanim if you're not the Chuyuk Rebbe. So the Kachuk of the Rav wanted to suggest that here you can go to the Sefer Haredim, but since the Sefer Haredim says that it's a mitzvah on the Yisrael also to get the bracha, so then using that, the shlichus could work, because he has a Russian kedushin that says that even if somebody would not normally be valid for shlichus, in that case it's talking about a katana who's accepting pesach kedushin on behalf of her father who's marrying her off, so somebody wouldn't necessarily be qualified for shlichus, but they're a part of the mission themselves, they're relevant to the mission, so then shlichus could work. So since the Yisrael is also obligated, so therefore Yisrael could be a shliach for the Kohen, and the Berachas Kohanim, and that's how it works as Zman Hazeh. Fascinating idea. There's also a big machlokus whether Shemayah Kohanim could work for Berachas Kohanim, which prompts a lot of the major literature about Shemayah Kohanim. There's a famous comment to Beis Halevi and the Netziv, through Rashi Yeshiva Velazhin. They both have separate discussions. This Netziv has a tshuva where he says that Shemayah Kohanim does not work for Berachas Kohanim. And the Netziv thought it did work. Beis Halevi also thought it didn't work, but he says differently, that he has his own reason for it. And it prompted a whole discussion, which we won't get into now because we're just about out of time. But just to be aware of it, it's important to Mar Makom that there's a Mishnah in Megillah that talks about the Maftir. Maftir nowadays is very Mechubin de Galiyah, but in Chazal, it's considered to be the least distinguished Aliyah because it's not part of the Zion Kruim. So the Maftir got certain consolation prizes. The Mishnah has expression. Among the different things the Maftir gets was Vahu Yisus Kapa, Pika Duchim. So it's hard to understand because who says he's a Kohen and what about all the other Kohanim? So, alright, maybe we'll say it only applies if he's a Kohen, but still, what about all the other Kohanim? It's not a schus that's given to one Kohen. So the Beis Halevi says that a certain anonymous Chacham said that it means that they used to do it with Shemaya Kohanim, and have one Kohen get up there and all the other Kohanim would listen. So, I'll tell you a secret, the anonymous Chacham was Rabbi Saul of Vilna, the Shuvas Binyan Shlomo, he said like that, that he saw such a thing. And he saw that, he witnessed, I think it was in Trieste, saw Berachas Kohanim done through Shemaya Kohanim, and he said that that's what the Mishnah means. And the Beis Halevi said it can't be, he doesn't know what the Mishnah means, but it can't be, it means that, because Berachas Kohanim and Shemaya Kohanim don't mix. Because Shemaya Kohanim only works for verbal things, and Berachas Kohanim has extra conditions that go beyond speaking. It has to be done with a kol rum, has to be done with a loud voice. That's an extra condition. The Chazanish and others disagreed and said, no, that once you have Shemaya Kohanim, then you join all the conditions of what was happening. It's very relevant to our Kiddush discussion in the middle of, which God willing will continue on Sunday. We're around on Sunday, real quick? Yeah, okay, so we'll continue God willing on Sunday. But all of that connects to this point that how do you understand Shemaya Kohanim and how does it reflect on Berachas Kohanim? So this was a major discussion, which not for now, but just while we're passing Parshas Tosafot, we should know about it. Okay, so I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. It should be only good things. and that when I move back.